Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello and welcome to the 909 podcast. On this week's episode, we're going to be looking back at Electric Picnic 2019 and discussing what happened in Strand Valley this weekend just gone. And we'll also be talking about our album of the week from Lana Del Rey. It is Norman fucking Rockwell. I'm 909 and I'm joined by two people today. We've got Andrea Cleary, as
Hello.
Ever.
Hi.
And we've got Kelly Doherty.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
What's the crack?
Good.
Mots.
Yeah, so Kelly, we've been talking a lot about this Lana Del Rey album, which we'll talk about later. So you have a lot of thoughts on it.
Yeah, I'm incredibly excited to share all
okay,
of them.
Okay, good. Well, that's later on in the show. But first, we're going to talk about Electric Picnic. Myself and Kelly were there this weekend. Just gone. Andrea.
I'm going to sit this one out.
Andrea, what would you like to know about Electric Picnic?
I'd like to know...
that you didn't see already.
I would like to know who your favourite act was, who your least favourite act that you saw was, and what the general crowd vibe situation was like.
Okay, I guess it's been, what, 14, 15 years now that Electric Picnic has been going in Strad Valley? And it has become the biggest festival in Ireland. And as part of it being the biggest festival in Ireland, it is now... the one that everybody knows and everyone goes to from all ages, from young kids and families to the dads who go to one festival a year. That's what I felt. I felt like there was a lot of dads there this year. Like they actually had an area this year called Who Let the Dads Out, which was, you know, their wacky trailer park area. But
it's like Kasabian and Oasis.
It just felt like actually the right place for a lot of those people to be.
Are you sure that wasn't just Razor Light on the main stage?
We can get to that. So I don't know. At this point now, Electric Picnic has kind of lost its magic for me. I've been there every year since the second year. So it is what it is. I've said this before. I feel like I closed my eyes and just wander around the site and I'd still know exactly where I was going. Although a few things had changed this year. The main thing was that out in the former Oscar Wilde campsite, there was a new area called Freetown, which was housed an 8,000 capacity dance arena that was only used in the evening, probably.
Yeah,
for about 4 or 5 acts per day. But generally speaking, to get the bad out of the way first, it was incredibly busy in the main arena still and way too busy for me to enjoy it at parts. So I think it just felt like it was still too many people, too much going on, too much, even though they tried to address the sound bleed by putting up wooden fences around certain tents and stuff. there's that thoroughfare where Casa Bacardi is and where like the Today FM section is and all the food trucks. There's just so much noise coming out from everywhere that it's actually overwhelming, to be honest, still. So I feel like Melvin Benn announced on Sunday, who's the Festival Republic director, announced that they're going to add at least 5,000 people, maybe 10,000 next year. So in order to do that, I can't imagine how that site is going to cope with the sheer number of people who will be attracted to the main stage acts. So Kelly, you were there on Friday. You saw Billie Eilish. Apparently Billie Eilish had 57,000 people there. Yeah. The capacity of the festival was 60,000. So
that's nuts, isn't it?
If you gather that, there's probably another 20,000 people there in terms of bands, artists, vendors, performers, all that kind of stuff. Mm. A good chunk of those who were there on Friday, I wasn't there on the Friday, actually went to see Billie Eilish. So, and I heard a lot of reports that like it was very busy and uncomfortably so to leave that area. And that's the main arena. And that should not be the case at this point. And I felt like that was a few times over the weekend where you were near the main arena, because there's still so much stuff around there. You still have to go there. That it just felt uncomfortably busy.
Okay.
And it's not a relaxing place to be. Like, I found myself in the last couple of years looking for places to go just to like sit down for 5 minutes or just to get away from some noise.
Yeah.
And that's, I just feel like they need to expand that main arena, take out some of that stuff that's already there, move it further out, spread things out more. They need to spread things out more. That's how I'm feeling on it. Kelly, how many times have you been to the Electric Picnic?
I think I've been 5 times, I think, bar last year, each year in a row I went.
Okay.
I super agree with you on it. Kind of like every time you went near the main stage, it kind of felt like you were stepping into a war zone, whether you intended to be at the main stage or not. I was lucky enough with like Billie Eilish, and I'd say with the 1975 as well, that I was close enough to the front that it wasn't too... I was like close enough to the music that was like taking my concentration. Yeah. So I didn't mind it too much, but leaving it was just absolute hell. Like I was starting to get like super claustrophobic, and I'm fine with crowds, like, but I was starting to get super claustrophobic leaving Billie Eilish, because it felt like I'd been walking for like 20 minutes. We'd all lost each other because there was no way of holding on to each other.
Yeah.
And you were still just not seeing an end to just packed crowd. So, you know, that's not great. And it was the same even when Jess Glynn was playing, and I was just coming from the poetry tent. I was just trying to get somewhere else, and we just got caught in like masses of people running towards us. Yeah. And like we weren't intentionally there. Like that shouldn't be happening in the main arena.
Yeah. Like I spent a fair bit of time in the minefield this weekend past, because I was there DJing at the banquet, the charity do twice a day. And that it was quite an oasis of calm, actually, because it was like a sit down, nice meal for charity. But the whole time I was there, you could still feel the bass rumbles from all of the tents. And in my head, there's no reason for a minefield, which houses mostly spoken word stages, to be right behind the main stage.
Yeah.
And
100%,
it just doesn't make any sense anymore. Like, it, like, why is that there? It could be in its own calmer area way further out in the arena somewhere. So I don't know. That's one of the things I felt. I was like, if they are going to do this next year, they really need to address that. I think the thing about Electric Picnic, though, it always gets those acts that maybe you wouldn't get anywhere else still.
Yeah.
Like, I'm thinking about Charlie XCX, as an example, who's only
Heard she was one of the ones that I heard being reported as was a great gig. People were trying to get in, and you know, there was too many people.
She was fantastic. She was really good.
Yeah.
But it was also the novelty for me of never having seen her in that way. She actually played a gig for 99 in 2012 in London. Very small. When just before it was when Nuclear Seasons came out in the Camden Crawl.
That's crazy.
I had a lineup. I've said this before, probably. So if anyone's heard me, I'm sorry. Disclosure, Charlie XCX, a band called Symbols, who are kind of still around, and then a guy called Willie Moon, who went on to be an Australian pop idol.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, so we were a bit ahead of the curve there. There wasn't that many people at either of those gigs, but I knew there was something special going on. But she was great. She was a brilliant performer. It was great atmosphere in there. She did like the songs that she had written as well. So like Fancy with Iggy Azalea and the Iconopop song, I Love It, which I was not expecting. Because
Did she play the Spice Girls one?
Yeah.
The worst song of the year.
I actually couldn't stay for that because of my aforementioned DJ engagement. So sure. I couldn't stay for the whole. Actually, I did. I went to see Christine the Queens very briefly, who suffered probably over the weekend.
Massively, yeah.
They put her on earlier than she was intended to, announced. And then So there was kind of an overlap. But the one nice thing is that Charlie XCX and Christine got up together and did Gone, which was great. Really nice to see that. But she definitely suffered on the main stage. Christine, it felt like a bit of an anticlimax after so many times I've been like looking forward to seeing her again.
I wouldn't put her on the main stage.
I mean, she had a big show for it. She'd be great in a tent, like. There was lots of pyros and lots of dancing and stuff. And it just, but it, I don't know, it just didn't really feel like the right. I was like expecting it to be a weekend highlight. And I was just like, oh.
I think they should have been swapped. I just think it would have made way more sense. There was way more people at that festival there for specifically for Charlie XCX. Whereas Chrissy and the Queens, there just wasn't that much hype about seeing her. And I feel like Charlie XCX does have that like major mainstream crossover audience with a lot of the younger people who'd been at the festival, whereas Chrissy and the Queens would have, I think they would find her boring, to be honest. Like, I love her, but I think they would have found it boring. So I think if they'd had a swap there, maybe she would have benefited a bit more.
I think that gets to the wider point about the Picnic lineup and the way it's gone, you know, and in general, the way most festivals have gone, like Longitude, the way it started as an Indian rock festival and gone to a pop or more like a rap festival. And there's definitely more of a pop element happening at EP, which just makes sense because it's attracting a festival that sells out in advance without any lineup being announced can do what it wants in terms of lineup. So, and I think the makeup of the crowd at this point, even though there's plenty of opportunity to see something really interesting and unique and all sorts of variations, like the likes of Mitski and stuff like that, and obviously the Rave in the Woods and all that kind of things that it's become known for, there's still a lot more people pleasing that's being done on the main stages, like, or even the tents. Like, I saw Alma, who was great, the Scandinavian pop artist, and like loads of people at that.
Can you tell me about the 1975?
Now, I don't know if I can. I'm sitting beside two fans.
Did you not enjoy it?
I enjoyed the production.
Production's great.
I just don't get the songs.
I have it from a reliable source that it's kind of like what I was saying about Father John Misty a few weeks ago, that like the festival show was good, but it wasn't.
Yeah, you know, I could tell that it wasn't the full show. It didn't have the full Talking Heads rip off stuff.
And
all that kind of thing. But I think for
Talking Heads inspired.
Yes, like, sorry, I mean that.
I think it's a rip off if you don't know you're doing it.
But I think, just for me, I just find the songs, a lot of their hits are just not much further away from a big pop act that I just couldn't be interested in or anything like that. Like some of the melodies and stuff is just not for me at all. Of the music isn't for me. They open with People.
Of course
the song was it great featured last week.
I enjoyed it.
How did you find it?
I had the absolute hoot of my life. It's my seventh time seeing them. I really, really enjoyed it. But I just like, I love their music so much. And like in such an unabashed, I don't even know how critical I actually am when it comes to their music. Because like they played Somebody Else, I was crying. You know, I was just living every single minute of it. But I thought it was good. I caught them in the Three Arena. Was it earlier this year?
In January.
And it was much more scaled back than that. They at one point, unfortunately, I feel like they really lost the crowd though with the Greta speech.
Heard about that.
It's disappointing because obviously I think that's a really cool use of their platform, and it's upsetting that like literally no one cared. Everyone around me just started like talking, and there was like lads behind me booing and stuff, and I was like, this is disappointing. But it's also a festival set, so I'm not too surprised by that.
Maybe that speaks to you know, how they see themselves as opposed to anything else. Is like, here's an important message that we should put on the stage and give the time to breed. I actually wasn't that bad around where I was when that was on. People were kind of mostly paying attention. But it is a brave thing to do, to like basically put a recorded speech.
And I think so. I think that's pretty cool. Yeah. Even if like, if it got a bad reaction, that's still sort of holding a mirror, you know, and kind of saying, well, I mean, you're not really going to be turning around and talking shit about this to your mates in 20 years time now, are you? You know, the world is ending. So,
speaking of the main stage stuff, before we move on, I guess I really enjoyed the Strokes, even though it was like an absolute spectacle.
I heard young Julian was a bit rude.
He was all sorts. He was couldn't tell if he wanted to be there or not.
Yeah.
And but I think he didn't, the way he kept going on about it. He would say things like, I don't care, play the next song. Or like, and, but the band were kind of looking to him to like they gave him that time where they could have just played the next song and he would have shut up. And like, and a couple of points, he walked away at one point and just like, everyone was like, where is he gone? And then he turned to Albert Hammond Jr. at one point and was like, you're not going to recite that poetry you wrote.
Yeah.
And it was just this uncomfortable, he was holding the mic to his face and it was like, and eventually Albert was just like, I don't write poetry. And it was just like really awkward.
That's so mean.
There was loads of awkwardness on stage and he was like, if I had to fuck a guy, it would be Fab. Like, you know, he's a good looking man for sure. But like, it was like, just this, all this awkwardness and all the band were kind of like,
Can we play
what's going on here? So much so to the point that I, like when they got towards the end of the set and it was like the encore and I was like, I'm not sure they're going to come out for this.
Yeah.
I think there was a lot of wine involved. Apparently they were given a very nice dinner in the banquet place, actually, where I DJed.
Did you see them?
No, but I heard they were coming in.
Oh.
So I'd say they had a lot of wine.
Yeah.
There was that vibe of, it was like, yeah, giddy, but like troublesome and trying to be mischievous and pretty much succeeding. But when they actually played the songs, other than the fact that he forgot the words to Someday, which is, pretty bad.
Yeah.
I thought it was fantastic. I was like, I'm so on board for this. I just didn't expect that much from a Stroke show. Mm-hmm. And to get it and to them to be so good was just really good. It was just unexpected for me. So I really enjoyed it a lot.
For me, even though the lineup was brilliant this year, I had no interest in going to EP just because of like crowd sizes and that kind of thing. I'm not able for it. But I was thinking a lot about how you kind of have the 1975 and then the Strokes as this like double act main stage on the Saturday night. And I was thinking a lot about how that kind of, I don't know, points to an evolution in our like indie pop boys.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at Julian Casablancas as this like legacy rock star, and then you look at, I guess like the next pop iteration of that sort of character, with like in Matty Healy, it's funny to think about how it's now cool to be socially conscious in this sort of endearingly like naive way, where I was talking to a friend about it during the week and I was saying that it's almost like when you're a kid and you find out about injustice for the first time and you're like, well, we have to do something about it. We have to start a petition. It's like, I'm sort of getting that vibe from Matty Healy, and it's nice that their fans, that the 1975 fans are like this young generation who are definitely incredibly, you know, environmentally and socially conscious. And it's just, it's so funny to have that. And then right after the Strokes, where it's just this completely different thing that you're looking at. It's this cool,
it definitely
guy.
It felt like a vintage rock and roll show.
Yeah, it's a different sense. Kind of cool, like, that isn't really cool anymore.
Yeah, it's the nonchalance.
It's cool to care now. Yeah. It's not cool to not care anymore. Do you
it's
know?
Funny though, because that description reminded me so much of the first time that I saw the 1975 in Cork. I saw them, they played the Savoy for like a Freshers Week thing, and Matty Healy did all of the same crack.
Yeah.
He was like falling around the place with his bowl of wine, shouting horrible things and just being like a prick for the whole thing. It was like the exact same type of description, but now he's woke.
And now he's woke, and he's clean now, and he's sort
that's
of
fair.
Like
kind of sorting himself out.
Are we saying that 2019 won't allow somebody to be unwoke these days?
Not that it won't allow. It's just not as cool anymore.
Yeah, it's just I think people get embarrassed by it, that type of behavior now. When they look at it, they're kind of like, that's a bit.
Well, certainly the rest of the band in the Strokes looked a bit embarrassed. They were like, we're just playing the tunes and we're doing a really good job. And what are you doing, messing it up?
Yeah,
kind of looks. But yeah, what about the main stage for Billie Eilish on Friday? You were there.
Yeah, it was amazing. I was just surrounded by people just crying their eyes out. it was crazy as well, because it was just an experience I never really thought I'd have at Electric Picnic. Like it kind of reminded me of like a Three Arena type gig where you've got to see like some major pop sensation at their own concert and all their like stands are there or something. That's what it kind of felt like. I didn't expect to ever see like five rows of people bawling their eyes out at Electric Picnic. And it was like a proper frenzy of people like breaking down because she'd like run past them. And the whole front rows were like people who looked like her. Everyone had their hair dyed the same color as her, yeah, and all the merch. And I was like, this is so different to anything I've seen at Electric Picnic before.
Just anywhere where you're where you're around like a load of like young girls and young women just looking at their absolute idol. Yeah. It's such a lovely place.
It was such a lovely like feeling and everything. And the crowd was lovely as well. Like when it was said to me that I was so big, I thought that because of walking out at the end, but in terms of like crowd behavior, during it, everyone was like impeccable. There was no shoving, nothing bad. There was like small children in front of me. Like, aww, it was just, it was a really nice crowd, and she commands it so well as well. You would not think she's a kid. Like,
she's such a baby.
Yeah.
She's just a little baby. Like, it's crazy. It's mad.
Well, she's clearly able for it. She's
like, so able.
She is.
So beyond the main stages, then we had, I got to see a bit of Mitski, who obviously a fan.
She did some Pilates on a table.
Yeah, she's doing all sorts, it was an intense thing to do on a Sunday evening, but I kind of get it. I get where you were, like you were talking about it before, her show.
Did it bring you around to her music a bit more?
A little bit, but I still wouldn't be mad on it. But I really enjoyed the performance and it, like level of intensity was like something. I think it was only just not matched by her band, probably.
Okay. Yeah.
And she seemed to be struggling a little bit with her band. She kind of, the gestures she was doing before and during seemed like she was giving out to somebody.
Okay.
But the keyboardist mainly, I don't know why. But there was a bit of like, I don't know, behavior there that I wasn't sure of. But
okay.
It was an interesting presentation. And I guess the thing for me, I guess if you think about it in terms of presenting something like a guitar led show in that fashion, like you've seen David Byrne do it in the Three Arena, and he really goes in for it, like sitting down at a table or like choreographing things. And there was elements of that in her show, but what was missing, and this is a festival show, so it's maybe not going to be the same and not going to have that opportunity, but the band were just there.
Yeah. Right.
And it kind of felt like, no, there could have been something else there, the way that St. Vincent does it.
Yeah.
And the way she presents that show is like, and I kind of feel like Mitski could be on that level in a few years.
I fully
that's
agree.
Where she might be heading.
I think so.
And I think that's an interesting thing to note. Other than that, I didn't get to see Fortet, but I heard a lot of chatter about it.
I read an interesting review.
I think that review was taken down, so I never got to see it.
Oh, okay. Oh, never mind then.
Hot press review that was a lot of people were talking about this week.
Yeah.
So Fortet has a thing in the last while of not putting on the lights for his shows. And building up the atmosphere and the beats. I couldn't stay for that. I was on my own. I wasn't in the mood for it. But I did go in for a little bit and I was like, I know where he's going with this. But if I had been with a lot of people, it would have been maybe very enjoyable.
If I was a betting man, I'd bet that this is going to drop at some stage.
You wouldn't put it past him, actually. Yeah. Fortet to be like, I'm going to do an hour and a half of ambient music and at half 11 on a Saturday night in the second tent. You know, I wouldn't actually put that past him. Yeah. But and then separate to that, I saw a lot of good Irish stuff actually this year. I saw Nilo. You were at Nilo,
weren't
you?
Yeah, it was fantastic.
Yeah, Salty Dog show. Really, really competent and very confident show. You had Genova from New Sense on stage with him and Senu doing the DJ role. Really good. Really enjoyed that. Saw the likes of Just Mustard, but Just Mustard as well, who I think are fantastic. Saw Mango and Mattman shut it down at the Body and Soul main stage late at night on the Saturday as well. I was mostly working for the weekend and then I was there with Laboum.
Did you see any famous people in your banquet? Any celebs?
Does James Kavanagh count?
Yes.
Probably does.
Definitely.
I don't know. There was a lot of people there. Melvin Benn was there on the Sunday night. Kelly, what were your highlights of the festival and Billie Eilish?
Other than Billie Eilish, I think Pow Pig kind of brought me back to life on Sunday. I would have liked to have seen them in a more central part of the festival. I think they were in the Three Made by Music stage, and it just felt a little bit far out at that point of the day. People weren't really wandering down that way.
That would replace the Other Voices stage.
I really liked them. I thought they were great. AMAC was really impressive at the Body and Soul stage. I could 100% imagine her on like a main stage. It was really fantastic. Kind of similar buzz actually to Mitski, but slightly less intense and more like fun. But it was really good. I think they were kind of two of the big ones. And then obviously the 1975. Really liked Florence. Like I've seen that show multiple times now, and still there's kind of like this fun, wide-eyed like putting my suspense at the door. Like if any other artist told me to put my phone away, I'd be like, shut up. Okay. But when Florence does it, I'm like, yes, I must follow her. Yes, 100%.
Yes, mother.
Yeah. And Nilo again was wonderful. Yeah.
I heard James Blake didn't have a lot of people at his tent on Friday night.
No, and it wasn't a good buzz. I don't know. Like, I'm a big James Blake fan, but it just wasn't working at all.
He needs to stop doing festival shows.
Yeah, I think like live shows generally don't seem to mix with him that well. And like, I don't really have that much interest in seeing him live. Love his music. I love his albums, but just from what I've heard,
he needs to do it in a proper theater for a tour.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And he has not done that here since he did his first show in Whelan's.
Yeah,
on the just
did he not play the Olympia?
Right? Yeah, maybe I was not that one actually.
But
maybe that works better.
I don't think it did. I was really
disappointed because he was going to be like he was one of my acts I was looking for, and then I got in there, I was like, this is actually quite boring.
Okay,
and you can't even sing along with it or anything because other people were bored as well, so everyone was just awkward.
Everyone was just awkward.
Yeah, it was.
Thanks, James. Who else did I see? I saw a bit of Yuli, really good kind of slightly different to his regular show, which is more like psychedelic indie R&B jazz but vibes. It was pure jazz vibes that I saw towards the end. Saw Silverbacks once again, and actually they'll be playing a gig of ours on the 20th of September in the Workman's, which we'll be announcing on Monday. So look out for details of that. You see so much and you're like, I'm actually looking through here to see what I actually did see. Mm-hmm. Eve's Tumor caught his set very weird on Sunday night. It was like he's on Warp and it was just him on a table riding around really. And I think, don't even know if he was singing really, but it was enjoyable. All the same. Oh, I saw Parquet Courts. That song. I basically was there just for one song, really, if I'm honest. Wide Awake, which was fantastic. And I caught a bit of The Streets, but I was already...
Forgot they were playing.
My head was already out of the festival. I was driving home and he was doing a lot of crowd banter that I didn't have time for.
You didn't have your bucket hat.
He was talking
a
lot about champagne, but he was kind of like just kept talking about like to the crowd, and it was like he was asking questions to the front row, and you're like, just fucking rap, just stop this madness.
Play fit, but you know it.
Yeah, like he started with like Turn the Page, and I was like, great, this is gonna be good, and then it just kind of like derailed slightly, and I was like, I don't have the patience for the rest of the show. But look, that's the thing. I mean, like, The Picnic is the massive festival event of the year in Ireland, and it's not going anywhere anytime soon. So it is what it is. I think if you want to go to see some of those acts, you will. You can have a good time, but there are certainly a lot of things I'd like to see change there.
Would, last question on the Picnic, were all of the stages horizontal?
Oh, yes, they were.
Oh, that's
well, the salty dog isn't. That's okay. Slanty.
It's slanty, true.
That's a slanty one. Yeah. Why would you bring it up?
I asked because Samsung has teamed up with Mabel for the world's first vertical gig, which is a thing that we should care about. It is live music for the Instagram generation, I guess. And it's, you know, just a three-story vertical concert, and you
okay,
can take
so I saw the picture of this
pictures
right
pictures easily at it
yeah
guess.
So it fits in for your like landscape portrait. I always get those two things. I was like, landscape is landscape now.
Yeah.
It's the way you can fit your Instagram story, so you can fit the whole stage on your Instagram story
finally.
Yeah,
you know,
but I saw the picture of it and I was looking at it going,
it looks grim.
It doesn't make any sense because first of all, if like the DJ was on the bottom and on their own, and Mabel was in the middle, and then the band were up the top. So the first two stories, like, nobody, they have nobody to divide off on stage at all. So I just felt it was a bit weird.
And also, like that's going to work well if you're right in front of the stage. Yeah. If you're at the side of the stage,
it just seems like a really flawed logic, because if you're literally not the person who's standing in the middle of the front row, it will not fit your camera. Like, and you also have to have your camera like a very specific site. Like, have they forgot that cameras are adjustable?
Yeah.
Like,
I did see a picture from that same gig where some guy was holding it up. Landscape. Someone didn't get the memo.
Someone didn't get the memo.
I would purposely take all of my
I hope there was somebody there with an iPad.
Yeah. Oh my God. People with iPads at gigs are just, that needs to end. That only ever really happens. I only ever really see it at festivals because I feel like if I saw it like in the Olympia, I would smash it off the ground.
Yeah.
Get out of here, you idiot. Sure. Anyway, that's my rant.
Yeah. So I guess that is a marketing exercise that worked out for Samsung, got loads of press, so hey, yeah, we're talking about it.
Sponsor us, you cowards.
But other than that, like, I think it's time, we're moving into autumn now, we're gonna you know, things can be not always the brightest after you finish the summer festivals. You're a fan of autumn, Andrea.
Who, me?
Who, you?
Who, me? Yeah. I love autumn. I was walking to work today and there was some dead leaves on the ground. I was like,
you're ready for
give
this.
Give it to me. Yeah, I absolutely love autumn. Halloween's my favorite holiday of the year. It just, all the vibes. I love jumpers. It's all a good time for me. So I think my like main reason for being at all in a good mood this week is just
the creeping coldness, spooky vibes. And darkness.
Yeah, yeah. I've started my autumn playlist. It's very sad.
You're right in there.
I'm so in there.
Is that your reason to be cheerful?
Yes. My reason to be cheerful is that today I went outside and it was cold enough to wear a jumper, but it was still kind of bright. That was nice. I enjoyed that. And I was listening to Wilco.
I'm going hard
on autumn this year. That's my
reason. You got your hot water bottle out ready for
not
to
just
go.
Yeah, it is out. It has been unpacked and I packed away my summer clothes the other day. I don't really have summer clothes. I still wear jumpers, but yeah, packed them away, got the jumpers out. I'm ready. Bring it.
Okay, very good.
Thank you.
Kelly, do you have a reason to be cheerful?
I think pop music in general at the moment, I think like between the Taylor Swift album, the Lana album, the fact that Charlie XCX has an album coming out soon, I'm just so full of like pop joy at the moment. I feel like it's the wrong time because we're going into autumn. This should have been happening during the summer, but I'm kind of happy that trap is quietening down a little bit in the charts and now we're kind of getting back to some of the strong, powerful women making pop music and
very
and,
good.
Yeah.
Speaking of strong, powerful women, one of my reasons to be cheerful this year is this year and this week in general is FKA Twigs coming back with a new album called Magdalene, produced by Nicholas Jarre. She did a long interview with ID magazine this week, and so the album is coming out before the end of the year. And she was talking to ID about it, just saying, remember we talked about that Spike Jonze ad that she did for the Apple HomePod thing, which was just amazing. Turns out she had only just underwent a major surgery to remove tumors from her uterus like a few weeks before. So she still had showing the scars, or actually the staples from her surgery. So all of that movement that she came up with was done because she couldn't do anything else. So I thought that was interesting. I'm really looking forward to hearing that album and what it's going to be like. She said it's about every lover that I've ever had and every lover that I'm going to have. Just when you think it's really fragile and about to fall apart, there's an absolute defiance and strength in the way that my work's never had before. And in the ID thing, another thing that is interesting in it, that it says one of the songs sounds like Opus Trees 1992 song, It's a Fine Day. Does anyone remember that song?
No.
It's going to be a fine day today. It's a really bad song. But it actually kind of like, it's proto Grimes, which makes sense because we're going to go into our songs of the week. And the first of which is from Grimes. And this is called Violence. And it came out today. We'll be right back. That is Grimes with Violence, a new song that came out today from her forthcoming album, Miss Anthropocene, fifth studio album. Where do we start with this? I guess we talked a bit about Grimes before and
Azealia Banks
and Elon Musk and all that stuff that's been going on. But like musically, what's been going on with her? She did a couple of tracks with some J-pop kind of singers as well, didn't she? And had some label issues that prompted her to say my piece of shit label. But the album is coming. She had a song out last year called We Appreciate Power. I wasn't a fan of that song. Anyone a fan of that song?
No.
Yeah, it was kind of like new metal, kind of bubblegum electronic.
I didn't like it.
Pop. I don't think anyone here liked it. Okay. How do we feel about this song then? It was made with producer I.O. as well. And the video features Claire Boucher reading The Art of War. So,
of course it does.
Yeah.
I think it's fine. It's much better than the previous track that she's put out, and it makes me want to hear the album, but it didn't move me in any way. I don't know. I think maybe I just have this cloud of Grimes now as the person with all of the shit we've been talking about around her over the past year or so. There was just something in this where everything I was hearing, I was like, yeah, okay, now she's doing that. Now she's doing this. This is all a bit... It feels a bit Grimes by numbers to me. I don't know. I feel like I'm going to be an outlier on this, and it only came out today. It might grow on me, but
I feel like
stands,
the song could be a grower.
Yeah. I was thinking that when I was listening to it, I was like, maybe when I spend a bit more time with it, I'll like it more. But as it stands, I'm like, it's fine. I'm probably not going to return to it at the end of the year when I'm making a list.
Sure.
So
Kelly.
I think I'm kind of the same. I think all of the personality stuff and all the drama just kind of distracts a lot for me. And I think it's been a long time since I've actively really cared about a Grimes song. Like I used to really like her stuff. And in recent times, I just feel like I feel absolutely zero when I'm listening to it. Mm. Like I do think this is an improvement, but I think like she's done... I just find a lot of the tracks are a bit heartless or something. I think there's artists who are doing that kind of cold, calculated electro pop type sound infinitely better than she's doing it. I think a lot of like PC music or any of those types of styles are doing what she's doing more interestingly, I personally think. And she did a track last year with Bring Me the Horizon, the like British metal pop band, and it was one of the worst pieces of music I've heard, point blank. And since then, I'm just like...
Very forgettable.
Yeah, I just kind of forget about most she does.
I think Grimes is an album artist, so again, I will wait to see what happens when that album does drop.
Yeah.
I like this, but like I'm not like... I think I'm going to enjoy it more in a couple of weeks for sure.
Yeah, I have a feeling it's going to be one of those songs that as it grows in context, it will become more enjoyable.
I want to hear this on big speakers.
Yeah, probably. Yeah, I want to hear it live.
Yeah,
I think without her really well. Sound issues that she had the last time, the poor thing.
I think the electrocution.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, we'll move on to the next song. It is from Bombay Bicycle Club. The song is called Eat, Sleep, Wake. That is Bombay Bicycle Club. The song is called Eat, Sleep, Wake. Eat, Sleep, Rave, Repeat. No, it's called Eat, Sleep, Wake, Nothing But You. From their fifth album, Everything Else Has Gone Wrong, which will be released in January 2020.
Mm.
We're there now.
I know.
It's happening.
It's awful, isn't it?
They're playing Bigger Street on February 10th, 2020 as well. And it's their first album since 2014, So Long, See You Tomorrow. They went on a hiatus then, right?
Well, they broke up.
They broke up.
2016. And okay. They've come back now.
In the meantime, the singer Jack Steedman was doing a very different kind of project in 2017 called Mr. Jukes, which was like all this kind of jazzy hip hop kind of production. It was really interesting, but unexpected. Mm. I will leave the floor to you, Kelly. You're a bigger fan than me. So tell me how this fits in Bombay Bicycle Club's oof.
Yeah, it's a really good song. Well, I really like it. I think Bombay Bicycle Club aren't like a revolutionary band in any way, shape or form. I don't go into their music like expecting them to reinvent the wheel. But I think of that kind of British indie sound that was big when they were first start releasing stuff, I think they're the strongest of that pack. The music is still like likable and it's still interesting and it's nice to listen to. Like, I don't think there's ever been a Bombay Bicycle Club song that I would like skip over because it's just nice music to listen to.
Yeah, I found that with the last album. I found it enjoyable.
Yeah, it's like really good study music. I use it to study. I actually like the song. It reminds me a lot of Def Cavaquí, which is always a positive for me.
Yeah, which is a negative.
I put this song on the playlist this week because I think you hit the nail on the head there about Bombay Bicycle Club, where I've never felt like they've, you know, revolutionized anything for me, but they are like almost pleasant to a fault sometimes. Mm-hmm. But this, when it popped up on my like Discover Weekly or New Music or whatever, I didn't realize it was them. And I was like, who is this new sound? And it was them. And I was like, yeah, I really, really like this. It's unexpected for me to like it as much as I do, given the band, because I'm not like a massive fan of theirs or anything. But I like it. It's sort of, it's hazy and it bobbles along pretty nicely. I can imagine it sounding nice in a live setting. Yeah, I like it. What's your take on it?
It's pleasant. It's pleasant. Yeah. Produced by John Congleton, actually, funny enough, which I don't really hear much of an influence on in his. It kind of sounds like Bombay Bicycle Club to me.
Yeah.
Pretty much, just like slightly updated.
Yeah. I think it sounds like a little bit more, maybe more mature than their sound before. Their sound before was very like, it's the summertime and we're all outside. Yeah. Whereas this is maybe a little bit more subdued.
Things a little tighter in general. Yeah, it's a bit more like withheld.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
Okay, we'll move to another pick from Dre. This is a band called Black Marble and the song is called Feels.
See things the way they could.
Black Marble, what is this cool new sound?
I know, right? So Black Marble is the project of a chap called Chris Stewart from Brooklyn. They have two albums, I believe, but it's just him now. It was him and another chap for the first album, and now it's just himself. And I didn't know anything about this band before this week, and I heard this song, and it's just a really, really nice vibe. Like, it's this kind of dark synth but kind of pleasantly upbeat at the same time, sounds kind of hopeful. And then I delved into their last album, which was It's Immaterial from 2016, and it's kind of the same sort of stuff as this. And it's been a while since I've discovered a band where I like the sound of one song so much, and then when you go back to their back catalogue, it's still that. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's still they're kind of consistently themselves throughout. So if anyone doesn't, I don't know, maybe they're a very cool band to like, and I just didn't know them already.
I'd never heard them before. But I was like reaching back in my memory to see if I heard them. Because they're released on Sacred Bones, a pretty reputable label, and they have done for a while. And the name does not ring a bell.
No, not at all.
I just think it kind of fits into the sort of synthy revival that we've been having since like...
Chillwave.
Maybe a little bit darker than Chillwave if you're going back like before the whole Stranger Things thing, maybe even to like the Drive soundtrack.
Reminds you
a bit
of Twin Shadow maybe.
Very much so, yeah. Like a Timber that band.
Timber Tombo.
The kind of spookiness in it or something. I was just really, really big fan of this song this week, yeah.
Cool. Kelly, any thoughts on that one?
I'm always weak for that like 80s synth sound. Yeah. I think the second I hear something that's like a little bit lo-fi and has that, I'm like nostalgic for a time period I never experienced.
Same.
I'm like, yes, I'm in the 80s. Let's go. But it's really nice.
It's definitely a strong mood.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
That is Black Marble. Song is called Feels. Up next is Kelly's choice. It is Black Belt Eagle Scout. Song is called My Heart Dreams. As Black Belt Eagle Scout, Kelly, tell me more.
Black Belt Eagle Scout is my new favorite band name because it's so hard to remember, and I think that's brave. But she's an artist on Saddle Creek Records, which is kind of always a plus for me. I love that label so much, and she's just put out her second album. So she put out her first album, Mother of My Children, last September. And it got really high praise from like Fader, Pitchfork, and it was kind of just absolutely out of nowhere as well. And now she's just after releasing her second album, which is called At the Party with My Brown Friends. And she's just a really cool person in general. She's like a radical queer indigenous feminist and uses her platform for kind of talking about those issues and problems that people face. And, like, the music video for this track as well is about indigenous women and like the intersection between them and LGBT communities and stuff. I kind of love the sound of it. It's got that kind of Riot Girl kind of aesthetic to it, but like a lot softer. There's a lot more kind of holding back on it, and it's a really beautiful album overall, and there's a lot of acoustic numbers on there that are like really pretty as well. So
reminds me of South by Southwest in 2014.
Yeah.
Those kind of bands. Yeah. There's a lot of those. But it sounds good. And totally new to me. I had not heard this before.
Same with me. Totally new. Will be listening more. Didn't know much about her at all. So that's, you know, it's always a big plus when you see people using their platform for good things and sounding good while they do it. So yeah, this might be a new fave for me.
Great. Okay, our final song for this week is from Fortet, and it is called Anna Painting. We'll be right back.
That is a new track from Fortet. I started listening to that on the way down to EP in the car on Sunday. Oh, sorry. There we go. He's off now. turned him off. Yeah, Fortet, always worth a listen when he releases anything new, pretty much. And again, I just love this track. I just think it's quintessential Fortet in lots of ways. It has all the pretty melodies, but lots of like nice bleeps and bloops in it that really actually become like a hook almost. And I just think he has a way of producing music that is just fantastic, and I want to hear it all the time. And the EP is actually really strong for three tracks that are not tied to any singular release at all. They're just three tracks that appeared last week. How do you guys feel about it?
I really, really like this track. I think it's, yeah, it's lovely and melodic. And then later when that, I don't know what that stringed instrument is that comes in, if it's like a, if it's a harp or whatever it is that comes in later.
He's been using a lot of those kind of sounds in the last few years.
Yeah, it's...
Actually, he's always really used that kind of sound.
But there's something in that where it's not such an obvious melody, but it hooks really well in with everything else that's going on. It's kind of like contrapuntal to everything else that's happening around it. I think that's like a really, really effective moment when that kind of gets its chance to have a little solo or whatever.
That's what I think he's really good at as well, as like not sticking to a grid and like being able to bring those elements into the music that seem to float above it a bit more. And
definitely.
And they give it that kind of organic texture, that kind of warmth to it.
Yeah, it definitely, yeah, warmth is a good word for it, I think, because it just brings something real worldy into the machine. And I mean, yeah, he's always done that really well. I listened to the EP today and it's really strong. This is my favorite off it.
Yeah.
It's based around a series of paintings that a friend of his did, where he composed three tracks. And then she made three paintings based on those. And then for the fourth one, they did it the opposite way, where she made a painting and he made a song out of it.
Cool.
It's a very eloquent way of putting that.
Well, thanks for bringing that to our attention.
It's a cool kind of method of collaboration, I think, to kind of, because the music is so kind of visual in itself that it makes sense that it would have this like external visual element to it, I think. Yeah. But yeah, big fan.
Cool. Kelly.
Yeah, I think like he's a master of what he does, and I think he does it in such an interesting way all the time. I think especially because I get on a bit of fatigue at music that sounds like Fortet, because I think there's so many artists who try to emulate him and they do it in a really boring way, and you just get sick of the kind of stabbing synth sound. But he always manages to make it interesting, and that kind of human element as well. Like, it isn't robot music, like it there's always something personal to it, and it's always cohesive with each other as well. So he manages to keep a common sound but always make it intriguing. It feels otherworldly. I feel like I'm in the woods hanging out with some fairies. And this,
do you think
playing,
there's something about the way he produces that allows for that? Like, do you know anything about his setup? I know he used to use, like, in a live setup he used to use like Cool Edit or something like that.
Oh, really?
Ways, like, so like everything wasn't just tied to a grid necessarily, the way that Burial makes his stuff in like whatever it is, Cool Edit or something like that. So one of those audio programs that isn't necessarily tied to a grid, like Ableton or something like that. But I'm just interested in his process, maybe, that allows him to do that other than his actual creative imagination, you know. But that's Fortet. The song is called Anna Painting. And now it's time for Album of the Week. It is from Lana Del Rey, and the album is called Norman Fucking Rockwell. Let's hear a track from it. This is the title track.
And child, you fucked me so good that I almost said I love you. You're fine and you're wild, but you don't know the half of the shit that you put me through. Your poetry's bad and you blame the news, but I can't change that and I can't change your mood. Cause you're just a man, it's just what you do. All through and through, your head in your hands,
That is Norman fucking Rockwell, the title track of Lana Del Rey's fifth album. It has been receiving a lot of praise in the last week, I would say. And I feel like we're not going to be any different here. This is a fantastic album, to put it short. Yeah. But
I didn't know what you were going to think of it.
Really?
Yeah, I'm so happy that you like it. It's great.
I kept you in suspense. I didn't tell you. I thought we talked about this.
No.
I think it's a fantastic album. It's another week of a Jack Antonoff produced album. Mm-hmm. After
you,
last
you
week's
know,
Taylor
though,
Swift.
Would you?
No, you wouldn't. You really wouldn't. And from my perspective, now Kelly, you can talk about it in more detail because you're a massive fan, yeah. And so you can give us more context. But I've always struggled with Lana Del Rey's albums overall. I've always felt like they have dragged for me here and there, and she has moments that she really stands out. It's song wise, like in singles wise, or even like on the albums. But I've never been so impressed by her as I am with this album. It is I think it's her best album. It's her fifth album. It's her best for me, absolutely. She seems to have ditched some of the aesthetic kind of that she's been sticking to, that kind of faded American glamour thing, even though there's plenty of references still in there to America and culture and all that kind of stuff. There's so many references in these songs to even like Led Zeppelin and Laurel Canyon and Beach Boys and stuff like that. They're all there, but it definitely feels like a more of a singular statement, that she's less chasing a pop zeitgeist or anything like that. Like maybe some of her last album where she had A$AP Rocky and The Weeknd on it, which just didn't work for me at all. And I feel like this is a complete statement as an album, and it works so well. And so that's my opening thoughts on Norman fucking Rockwell. Kelly, how do you, as a fan, how did this work for you when you first started?
I definitely think it's her best album so far, I'd say by a fairly big amount, especially after the last album, which was most disappointing. I've been Lust for Life, I just thought was quite a poor record. It was very much her trying to attempt to hit chart success, when I think most of her strengths lie in being like a unique artist, whether that's a likable thing or a dislikable thing, depending on who you're talking to. It still is her thing, is that she doesn't kind of follow the chart stuff. But I think, yeah, like the approach to this album I thought was really excellent. So she started rolling out the singles last summer, so there's been a single like every couple of months, so we've known I feel like most people who are keeping up to date with it knew exactly how this album was going to sound, and the way that people were talking about it was, we're all going to be so obsessed with this album because the singles so far are so good. I think it's a really amazing piece. I think it's a lot of growth for her. I think she seems a lot more confident in herself on it, and less trying to imitate the kind of greats that she references. Yeah, I've always had problems with talking about Lana Del Rey, because I always find some of the discussion points around her to be, I don't want to say sexist, but I think a little bit sexist. Like I find a lot of what she has historically come under attack for has been very gender-based, and a lot of the standards that she gets held up to have been based on her presentation of femininity. A lot of the time from other women as well, I found people would talk about her as if she was like very anti-feminist, which I've always thought was incredibly unfair. There's small elements of me with this album. I think it's musically fantastic, but I think the different tone that people are using when they're talking about her and kind of saying that she's like a bit more real now and stuff like that, I struggle with a little bit. I think the presentation of feminine, I think with Lana Del Rey's music, she's always presented a really interesting insight to what it means to be a woman, and a certain type of woman, the woman who is in relationships with terrible people who they romanticize, and the woman who maybe doesn't have the healthiest relationship with her gender, but you know, still exists. And
who is still a valid woman.
And is still a valid woman. Yeah. And like, I've been in that situation. I've had loads of friends who've been in situations where you're going out with someone who's a scumbag and like you still romanticize them. And she got so much hatred for that. And I feel like on this album, she's a bit more like broken. Like she's a bit more like bare bones emotion, kind of regretting like looking up to these men, or regretting her her previous forms of ideas around her own gender and stuff. And I feel like that the language has changed because of that. And it's like, it's a really fantastic album, but a small part of me is like, is the femininity that she's presenting now a little bit more acceptable because it fits what people like more? Yeah. And is that why some of the language around her is, because a lot of the stuff is still similar. She's still using the like old school references, the glamour, the American ideology type stuff. Yeah, that's just kind of one thing I've had a little bit of a bug about with a lot of the talk around it. Mm. But I don't know, whatever you kind of think.
Yeah, I definitely agree that her kind of all-American 4th of July aesthetic didn't get it for a lot of, it didn't work for a lot of people for those reasons where it's like, oh, she's romanticizing a time when women couldn't vote, or she's romanticizing toxic relationships. And I think that even though I haven't been a fan of her albums in the past, I'm the same as you, Niall. I feel like she's been a very strong singles artist, and then the albums have kind of not done it for me. But I feel like what she's doing here is that little bit more maybe intentional, or maybe it's the time that it's being released in. Like, I feel like the ideas and aesthetics that work so well in this album have always been there with her. But now, given the context of, you know, talking about America and looking to America's past as something to hold up, as their president does and as their Republican Party does, I think it's even more vital now that there is, you know, there's a mirror being held up to what was actually so great about America before. And I think she works so well around that idea of Norman Rockwell, who mm-hmm. as an artist, you know, he aimed to paint America at its very best. And it's clear that the America that Norman Rockwell was painting and the America that he was envisioning didn't exist then. And it was always an idealistic future that, you know, could be if America got its shit together. And I think Lana on this album is doing the same thing. Mm. She's pointing, or she's discussing an America that isn't real, like she always has been. But in the way that she's doing it now, she's being critical of the idea that we're looking towards this past where things weren't good. You know, women didn't have a good time. The American dream is a con, it's a sham, you know. And I think that sort of like nostalgia tinged dissonance is what works so well on this album, where she is picking and choosing the greatest bits of America and American music and American culture, like Norman Rockwell, but she's also like he did later in his career in his painting, she's also kind of saying, we're not living up to this, and we'll never live up to this unless we sort our shit out. And that's what makes this album feel like really just vital in its context now. Mm-hmm. I feel like she's finally, for me, singing about a real America, and like through the lens of, is this really the America that you want us to be? Do you really want us to go back there? And I just find that it questions what we, and like what Americans and what we as outsiders know America to be, and sort of says, no, this isn't what America is. Do you know? It's I don't know. I've just been thinking a lot about how she's navigated her image of an all-American kind of, you know, woman in like a Jimmy Stewart film, or a rebel in the backseat of a cabriolet. Is that a
Chevrolet,
that's the one. Like, it's just that very kind of 1950s teenager aesthetic that, you know, never existed. And now she's just kind of cleverly turning it on itself, or the culture has turned so that now she fits it. I'm not sure which one it is, but
I think that's giving her less credit than she deserves, maybe, for this album and the way she's talking about those things.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, it's not that, like, I'm not saying that the culture has changed and now it works by accident. I mean more that the culture has changed, so now she has an opportunity to speak on the same level as people. Like, I think she's been pointing to America's past in a critical way for a long time, but critics haven't necessarily delved any deeper than, oh, or the critics that you were kind of alluding to there, than saying she's romanticizing the past or she's romanticizing toxic relationships. I think she's always been critical of that in her own way, you know?
I find this a lot more personal than her other work in general, but also in terms of what you're talking about there, in terms of like American pop culture, like the song, The Greatest, the way she talks, like LA is in flames, it's getting hot, Kanye West is blonde and gone, Life on Mars ain't just a song, I hope the live stream's almost on. Like, it just feels more relevant to what's going on now and generally speaking in the world than some of the other things she was reaching for, I think. And that's maybe for me where I this chimes more, but also on a personal note, like, she's writing a lot more personally, I think, on this album than she ever has. And that is something I find quite engaging. Like even there's things there, like we've joked before about, like, you can come up with a Lana Del Rey song title or whatever, you know, but there's stuff in there that's like 24/7 Sylvia Plath, or like Ice Cream, Ice Queen. You're like, yeah, okay, that's total Lana Del Rey like territory, but like, it just fits it more. It's like she's just more comfortable in all this, and she's got to the point where she's a better songwriter. She's got good collaborators working with her who are working to her vision, and the songs are just way better. They're just way better overall. And she's created this, like, where the last album was trying to do that, like, kind of some of that trap pop stuff, as you said. Like, this is not compromising in any way, but it draws from all sorts of previous genres, and like, but it just kind of feels like its own thing again, which is why when she first came out with like Video Games and stuff like that, there were some, it was so impactful because she exists outside of the pop side guy. She's not a part of it most of the time, and it's easy to forget that because like, she is spoken about at the same time as all these other artists, but I think she's totally different than anyone else. Almost like, I was surprised, I shouldn't be surprised, but I was almost surprised that when she played at Malahide Castle earlier this year that it was completely like stuffed. Right? Yeah. So did you go to that?
No, I had tickets, but then I ended up going to Body and Soul. Okay.
That was the same weekend.
I was glad to miss it. Yeah, it was the same weekend, which was a huge mistake for the gays of Ireland. We were all pretty upset.
I think here she's definitely moved away from being that sort of, maybe adhering to an aesthetic of like mid 20th century, like values where men were men and women were sad. And now it's kind of like pointing more towards the fact that the values of today are regressing to that time. And as well as that, her melodies have never sounded better. Like her actual music.
Her vocals have never sounded better.
Yeah. She just, like, there's not a song on this that I take off. The first time I heard Doin' Time, I was jarred. I was like, oh God, I don't know about this. Now I'm like this.
Which is a cover of a Sublime song.
Yeah. One of my songs of the year, for sure.
Could have went either way. Yeah. Like, it was so close to being, the original is a cod reggae LA song.
Yeah.
So, like, it could have gone either way.
It was made
for, keeps elements of that and somehow it works.
It was made so for they're making a documentary about Sublime, and that was where it originally was recorded for, and then she recorded it and she was like, hold on,
I want this
on my album.
Yeah.
And then asked the label, and that's how gone.
I think The Greatest is her greatest song that she's written. It's just, it just moved me so much when I heard it. It's just there's a whole world in that song. Just like, you can take out any words that she's even saying, and it's just so musically rich and warm and absolutely gorgeous. I do think that her being more personal on this is also her being that bit more political, or that bit more kind of coming at the world.
It feels like she's more assertive though.
Yeah, absolutely, definitely.
As well. 100%, the way she's addressing,
goddamn man child.
Yeah, like, she's addressing the men and like, not this like, I'm too cool for this, or like, she's not, she feels like a well-rounded person in terms of her lyrics, and more personally giving more of herself as well.
I think the level of intimacy on some of the tracks is just like phenomenal. Like Mariner's Apartment Complex for me, and Hope Is a Dangerous Thing for a Woman Like Me to Have. Yeah. They're such rawly confessional songs that you just don't hear in pop at all. Like, and there's stuff that I think, I always say this with Lana Del Rey, I just feel like she communicates my understanding of femininity in such a wonderful way. Like when I'm listening to that music, I feel like I'm hearing someone talk about things that I never hear being spoken about in music. And I think the interesting thing was like there was an interview with her recently where she was explaining The Greatest and the lyrics about Kanye West and stuff. And people asked her about her politics in it. And she said she was a centrist. And people on Twitter were like getting really angry about it and stuff. Being like, why aren't you left wing? Whatever. And I was like, why are you looking to this particular individual for
your politics?
That, for that type of, like, because the kind of woke politics artists are very polished. And if you can go to something like Lizzo, that's fantastic. But with, I think with Lana Del Rey, it is that kind of confessional stuff that's coming out now where it's like raw. I wouldn't expect her to be like politically. I feel like her politics is personal. It's her personal experience, and it's not really like sloganeering, which makes it kind of seem a little bit more honest, I think, than what you're hearing elsewhere in the charts and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think with kind of female pop stars, there is definitely something in her that it feels like she's singing the things that I wouldn't really say to my friends. Mm-hmm. Like even in her past albums, like, yeah, we've all gone out with people who are awful and we think they're great because they're awful, and like it's just sort of talking about the stuff that as feminists you don't really have the floor to talk about because it's problematic and because it's not helpful to the cause and things like that. And it is helpful sometimes to just hear somebody say, yeah, this guy is really horrible to me, but I love him anyway, because it's like, okay,
that happens
to women. And there's an honesty and there's a kind of an authenticity in that, where just because you're singing about something like that doesn't mean that you're you know, condoning it. You're providing a space for a person to recognize their own behaviors and their own feelings within that. And I think that there's, like, I've had to kind of learn over the years that that's what she's doing and not be as critical of her, you know, singing her truth. And if her truth is a bit centric, like, I don't know, just like from interviews with her and from like stuff she said publicly about Trump and stuff, I don't know if I'd put her there.
That's the thing. And that's what I kind of thought was, it came across quite even more authentic in this kind of situation, because I don't think she probably actually is a centrist, because the way that she talks about things is always quite liberal left wing, but she's just not really a virtue signaler. And I think that's quite refreshing in pop music.
She probably doesn't have enough confidence to say, like, it'd be hard to say, oh, well, I'm left wing. And then all of a sudden, all these people are like, oh, well, what about in 2011 when you said this?
Yeah.
And you're probably just better off playing it safe.
Yeah.
And also, like, we don't need to ask her about her politics.
Literally,
like,
her
music is the thing that matters here. And me personally, I know she's not, from her interactions on Twitter today, she's not that up for people taking too much from her album that isn't there. But for me personally, this album helped me understand what American kind of, what the whole Make America Great Again thing, it just kind of made that make sense to me. And it brought that to my attention in a new and refreshing way, like new and refreshing ways to hate that as a statement and hate that as a political kind of asset to a campaign or anything. It just kind of brought that up in like a really sort of personal way that I was just so floored by and so moved by. I don't know if she was doing it or not, but that's what I took from it. Sorry, Lana.
I think it bears repeating that like her vocals on this are the best she's ever done.
And
when I went back and listened to some of the album tracks that I really enjoyed, I just didn't get the same sense of power or feeling
from previous albums
as I do with this one. I just think she's singing better, she's giving herself more space, she's sounding less like, you know, a lot of the criticism in the early days of Lana Del Rey was like, she's playing this role and this aesthetic, and like, it doesn't feel like that anymore.
She's spending like a lot more time in those upper registers as well. Like,
she's found a lot of I remember the first time I heard that song, Shades of Cool, I think it was from Montreal Islands?
I think so.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, I didn't know she had this in her. And I feel like that's been more fully realized on this album now. So I'm going to give you a choice. Do you want to hear a bit of California, The Greatest, or Love Song?
I've heard The Greatest.
The Greatest, yeah.
Okay.
It is The Greatest.
Those nights were on fire, we couldn't get higher. We didn't know that we had it all, but nobody wants you before the fall.
Well, before we sign off, after all, there is one other thing we should talk about, Atlanta, right, which happened today. Oh, yeah, it's happening again. I haven't figured this out yet. As we saw with Lizzo a few months ago, responding to critics, this was a bit of a strange one today. Lana Del Rey responded to Anne K. Powers, who wrote a very long essay almost about the album, and mostly glowing, but it just brought to mind so many questions about the nature of the artist-critic relationship and whether a critic can be wrong if they're told by the artist. So Lana Del Rey responded to Anne K. Powers about the review. Do you have the text there?
Yeah, so she said to her, "Here's a little side note on your piece. I don't even relate to one observation you made about the music. There's nothing uncooked about me. To write about me is nothing like it is to be with me. Never had a persona, never needed one, never will." And she followed that up with, "So don't call yourself a fan like you did in the article, and don't count your editor one either. I may never have made bold political or cultural statements before, because my gift is the warmth I live my life with and the self-reflection I share generously." And that was in response to like a largely kind of approving and positive review of an album that was incredibly well researched and well written and had a lot of the writer's personal experience with the album in it.
Yeah.
And I don't think this is a good look for any artist, but especially somebody like Lana Del Rey, who has stans and is just going to cause a stampede on this writer. And
so it seems like she other than like the word uncooked in there is something that like bothers her. There's a couple of other things in the mostly glowing review that says that are a bit negative, but mostly that like it's comparing her to Joni Mitchell and a song from 1972, and said Mitchell's lyrics read as poetic and incisive. Next to it, Del Rey's feels uncooked. That's just one line in it, but it's generally overall very positive. There's another part I noticed earlier on that was a little bit maybe negative about her. But I think overall, like what I think is like, okay, first of all, she shouldn't have done this. She shouldn't have responded, because there's been unanimous pretty much critical praise about this album. So to hone in on a couple of different words in a review is one thing. But the other part of it is, like, just because Lana Del Rey doesn't see herself in Anne K. Perry's review doesn't mean that it's not a valid observation, because music is going to be there to be interpreted by critics, and it's not necessarily...
We're getting into Barthes' Death of the Author here, which is the philosophical concept that if once you create a work, it no longer belongs to you. The author is dead, and the work is only alive in the experience of the person receiving it. And I subscribe to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, most people do, and even like most artists are like, well, you know, it's out in the world now, so I won't give you the meanings of it. Yeah. And now on this day of genius and all that kind of stuff, even I saw on Genius earlier on one of the songs where she talks about a black narcissist. Fans were wondering if it meant it was a reference to Azealia Banks, because she had a go at her earlier this year, and she vehemently was like, "I don't write songs about race. I don't write songs about specific people who I don't know."
Yeah.
So, and it was very much in the same vein and language as she like responded to Anne K. Powers.
Yeah.
I
think that there's a risk here, not only of, you know, damaging a writer's reputation and making them have a shit time of it on Twitter. There's a risk here of kind of narrowing in too much on what an album is about and what is actually contained within it. If you keep telling people no, that's not what it's about. No, that's not what it's about. It, you'll run out of things for it to be about, you know, like it, what I love so much about this album is that there is a multiplicity of interpretations contained within it. And you can listen to it in one mood and experience one thing. You can listen, like it contains multitudes. It has layers. And for her to just say, no, that's not what it's about, I think is doing a disservice to good criticism. And it's also doing a disservice to good songwriting.
Yeah.
It's just a shame, really.
I think it's always a bad look. I wonder what the motivation behind it is with Lana Del Rey for the response. Because I think, like, if you look at, like, the change from her interviews in earlier albums to what she's doing now, I think she's very actively made a decision to drop the persona that people critiqued her for having. Mm. So I think she's trying to come across like a regular person now. And she's trying to be, like, open with things. And I think potentially there could be a reluctancy to have any type of thing projected onto her. I think she's scared of different interpretations being projected onto her because she's opened herself up in this different way now. And she's scared of people perceiving her in different ways. Because I watched an interview of her last night as well, where she was saying that James Franco, the actor, said he was writing a book about her called Conversations with Lana Del Rey. Mm. And she contacted him about it and she was like, I don't really know you. What conversations have you had with me? And then he sent her on like excerpts about it. And she was talking at length about how he projected this vision of a type of woman on her, right, and all this sort of stuff, and how much she hated it and how bad it made her feel and stuff like that. So I wonder if it is coming from this idea of like, she doesn't want personality traits projected on her, which I think I understand, but like at the same time, you're an incredibly famous pop singer with a large persona. So that's going to happen with you, and you have to accept that.
And also to say you've never had a persona, never will, is like, it's a fallacy. Like you have, and you,
whether you want one or not.
Yeah.
And you went along with that narrative for the first album at least. Mm. So I don't think that's fair.
And every pop singer has a persona, even if your persona is being like a down to earth, cool guy in a band who's really, that's your persona. Yeah. Whether you like it or not, you're famous, so it's a persona.
Yeah, well, I mean, her artist name is not Lizzie Grant. It's Lana Del Rey.
Exactly,
so,
yeah.
You know, you do adopt something. In
yeah.
That,
yeah.
Like by performing and putting music out there, you are doing that.
Yeah.
So,
and I felt so bad for the writer as well, because she's clearly a fan. And
see Kate Burrs is like a legend. Like, she's like been doing this for years, and she put together loads of, I have loads of books at home, best music writing.
Yeah.
They did for like 8-10 years in a row. She would collate the best writing of that particular year.
Yeah.
And yeah, she's great. And like, it clearly it's a very well written piece, and it's not a hit piece in any way.
No.
So I think all these artists need to figure out how to take criticism, like Chance the Rapper trying to get a bad review taken down, or Lizzo reacting negatively to a lukewarm review, even though she is now currently number one in the US Billboard charts.
Is there something where, like, once an artist gets a 9 or above on Pitchfork, they think that everyone else is then wrong? Like, what if they've, especially a pop artist, it's like, oh, if we've cracked Pitchfork, then anybody who has anything negative to say, they're clearly not right. I don't know. It's just something. It just shows stand behind your work as itself. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't need to explain it. Like, that's it's so boring.
Yeah. And the funny thing about all that is that, like, you know, it gives so much power to actual critic reviews when in a time when everyone's talking about there is no power in it. And I think that's really interesting as well, to be like if the artist really felt like it didn't affect their career, they should just leave it completely.
Yeah.
But obviously they feel the need to respond to these things, and I think that's, somebody needs to take their phone away.
Yeah. I think it's goofy as well, because like, we don't live in an age where music critique is particularly harsh. Like, it's very rare to see a lot of very harsh criticism of music. So it's just like, you're going to hear things maybe that you slightly disagree with, but there's rarely like hit pieces anymore.
Even that word uncut could just mean like, it's more like raw ingredients as opposed to like, oh, it's undercooked.
Yeah.
Like, that's a different thing.
I think And I think as well, like most people that I know and myself included would approach an album review still like from a personal perspective. Like, when you're writing an album review, you can't be objective. Like, there's so much subjectivity in your experience of the album and the things that you're bringing to it. That's why there's good album reviewers and there's bad album reviewers. Otherwise, you'd just be listing what songs are good and what songs are bad, you know? Like, writing a review or a piece around a piece of music is creating something in itself. And I think to try and police that and to try and sort of come at that with a red pen, so it sort of takes away a lot of the work that goes into writing a piece like that, which is brilliant. I really, really like that piece. And I thought it was really well thought out and well presented. And it's just kind of got this black mark on it now because people are going in looking for the bad mm-hmm. thing that she said about Lana Del Rey.
Which isn't obvious at all.
No, not at all. And there's so much more to that piece. It's a whole narrative in itself. Like, and just let things exist alongside your music, yeah. You know?
I think you're right. I think a lot of people need to go back and look at the old NME reviews yeah. or Q reviews or Rolling Stone reviews and see how bad and how yeah. negative and how crude and yeah.
And that can
cruel.
Be fun. Like
some of those people were.
But mm-hmm. you'd never do it about an artist who didn't deserve it, you know?
Do you remember that Jet review on Pitchfork?
Oh, yeah, just the monkey throwing shit or something. Yeah. Like, yeah. Just a picture of a monkey throwing shit.
Jesus.
Yeah. So thankfully we don't have that anymore.
No.
But okay, that's Lana Del Rey's album. We all agree it's a fantastic album. Probably one of the albums of the year.
For me, yeah. Yeah.
Okay, cool, great. Let's play a bit more of a song just to wipe the slate clean from the critic talk. This is a love song.
I believe in a place you take me, make you real proud of your baby. In your car, I'm a star and I'm burning through you. In your car, I'm a star and I'm burning through you. Oh, be my once in a lifetime. Lying on your chest, in my body dress, I'm a fucking mess, but I. Oh, thanks for the highlight. Baby, it's the best. Pass the test and yes, now I'm here with you and I would like to think that you would stick around. You know that I just died to make you proud. The taste, the touch, the way we love, it all comes down to make the sound of our love song. Dream a dream, here's a scene. Touch me anywhere, cause I'm your baby. Grab my waist, don't waste any part. I believe that you see me for who I am, so I spill my clothes on the floor of your new car. Is it safe to just be who we are? Is it safe to just be who we are?
Yes, it is safe to just be who you are. It is Lana Del Rey with Norman fucking Rockwell. Guys, what have you been reading and watching and listening this week? What's been consuming you?
I've been reading a very good book called How to Lose a Country, The Seven Steps from Democracy to Dictatorship by ECE, is how she spells her first name, Temel Kuran, who's a Turkish writer, political writer. And the book sort of looks at what's happening in Europe widely, but particularly Britain and the US in terms of populism and relating it to kind of tropes that have been occurring in Turkey for years. And it goes through seven things you need to do to, you know, destroy democracy and become a populist leader and eventually a dictatorship. So a light week, really. You know, not much else going on other than that. This has probably been informing my highly political interpretation of the Lana Del Rey album, to be honest. But yeah, it is genuinely excellent. It's essentially easy to read because, you know, there's a lot of kind of big politics in it, and I can get confused by stuff like that. I still don't really understand Brexit, but I think probably in the times that we're living in now, anybody who is worried or is, you know, anxious about the world, it, this has given me a better understanding of kind of the signs to look out for. So I'd absolutely recommend it. Yeah.
Very good. I've been listening to the podcast you recommended last week, which was Land of the Giants.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's Amazon. Good, isn't it?
Yeah. Very good. Very good. I realized they're going to actually probably feature a whole series on Facebook then and Google, presumably.
Yeah.
The Amazon one is interesting, especially all the Alexa stuff and the way that they talk about customer obsession and all that kind of thing. Yeah, it's really interesting. It's
depressing. I need the great Cambridge Analytica podcast of the ages. Like, I need someone to just make that. And I feel like these guys might do it. Right. So. Very good.
Kelly, what have you been consuming?
I've been consuming academic papers and college work. So not much space outside of
anything
that.
Anything interesting in that?
No, it's all pretty bleak.
The Taylor Swift album has been.
I listened to the Lana album for 8 hours straight yesterday whilst doing study. Yeah. I've been going through Noah Baumbach's movies this week. So watched Frances Ha, and then watched Mistress America last night. So I think he's got a new one coming out soon. So I'm preparing for that.
Nice. Yeah. I started watching that TV show Euphoria, which is very good, very stylistic. Very interesting and basically a teen drama show, but around modern life and social media, and but done in a real way that's not shit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've been excited to watch it. Yeah,
it's great, really good. And finished the just watching everything else I've been watching in the last few weeks, Succession, and finished Legion, the final episode of that show, which Dre does not like.
I don't like that show. I also went to the cinema. I went to see The Souvenir, which is the new Joanna Hogg film, has Tilda Swinton and a lady called Honor Swinton Byrne, who I think is the niece of Tilda, something like that.
Sounds like it.
And Richard Ayoade has a very small part in it. I'm like a huge fan of him. I love him, and I love when he does like real acting and real performing, and he was excellent in it. He was only in it for one scene. He was hilarious, but also brilliant, like just brilliant acting. And yeah, very strange film, hyper realist and artsy, I don't know, we'll say. But I was confused and felt suffocated throughout the whole thing. And then at the end, when I was leaving, I was like, oh, I was quite moved. So, you know, art films. Yeah, it's very good.
I'd like to watch a good film now this weekend, I think. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm not going to be doing much.
Recommend Souvenir. It's good.
Yeah. Good. I watched a very cool movie called The Matrix.
The Matrix, so good.
Yeah. I've seen it and saw it. I even wanted to watch it. I was like, okay, let's watch it. I was like, this is very enjoyable.
Every time.
At first, I thought this is going to date so badly. Mm-hmm. But actually, it hasn't. I mean, the costumes are the costumes, and you know, that kind of cyber techno thing.
But even when you're looking at those visual effects now, they're as good as, you know, any of the other ones that are happening in Marvel films and stuff. Like,
yeah,
so ahead of their game. Like,
yeah.
And sure. I like all three of those films.
I haven't seen the other two yet, but maybe I'll watch them next week. No, I have, right. But like not for 10 years or whatever. If I remember, they weren't as good. But
they weren't as good, but yeah.
Yeah, entertaining enough. Yeah. Good old-fashioned action movie.
It's good time.
Like sci-fi tendencies into that. That's it from us, I think, this week. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is going on this week? Nothing. I'm going to have a very quiet week.
Do you know what's going on in October, though?
Yeah, go on, tell them.
We are doing a live podcast at the Cork Podcast Festival. You can see us on October 13th in the Kino in Cork. And we're very excited and we're doing plans and yeah, get on down. It's free, but I think you need to get a ticket.
Do you?
I think so. I don't know. Well, from what I've heard, Cork people just show up places and they don't buy tickets.
That's how I got here.
Yeah. Like, apparently it's a thing in Cork where it's like, oh, have you got, like, people will be going to gigs. And it's like, no, I don't have a ticket. I'll just buy it when I get there. And I have that from reliable sources. So
I heard something about Galway, though.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, maybe we'll see. So, yeah, we're doing that. So fun times. Yeah,
and I should say, speaking of Cork, we helped out on the music trail for Sounds from the Safe Harbour Festival next weekend. So have some of the acts playing at the music trail, part of the free music trail, part of the weekend. It's going to be an amazing festival, starting with John Hopkins on Thursday night doing a DJ set in Dally, which is completely sold out. But we're doing a prize at the moment for tickets for John Hopkins and a hotel stay that night, and then tickets to Grand Brothers as well the following day. The likes of Sam Amadon, Leslie Feist, Queeveen and Rahala, all sorts of interesting people are doing stuff. And we have the likes of the Mary Wallopers playing some trad sessions on the Sunday. Garrett Quinn Redmond, Nilo's playing his first Cork gig, but Jar Jar Jr. as well. So lots of interesting stuff happening in Cork next weekend. So I will look forward to that. I'm going to have a quiet weekend this weekend.
Lovely.
Maybe, maybe. Who knows? I have no plans.
Good.
Kelly, what are you doing? You've got a gig happening this week.
Yeah, I'm playing. I'm doing a DJ set tomorrow night in the Bernard Shaw for Gash Collective with So Hot, So Spicy. It's going to be a big night of bangers.
So it's Friday night.
Yeah, Friday night. So I've been getting some drum and bass ready earlier. So I'm pretty excited for how it's going to go down. Last time I played there, I just played loads of drum and bass because there was no one there. And I was like, this is hilarious. but all the staff were dancing. So I was like, you know, it's a victory. But yeah. That should be a lot of fun.
And of course you make music as Gadget on the Cloud. Yeah. You have some gigs coming up soon?
I've no live gigs coming up soon. I've done a bit of a stall ball before my thesis is due, so I'm taking a little bit of a break. But I'm DJing the week after for District Magazine's
That's their culture night.
Night event. Yeah. Oh, so cool. That's in.
Who else is on that one?
It's me, Pat Lagoon, C'est la Vie de May, the District Lads, and Boy Wonder. So it's a mix of DJ sets and live performance. So it should be great crack.
Cool. That's the same night as our Workman's gig. So we can run around the corner and have a look. So that Workman's gig is the 20th of September. Got Silverbacks. And
that's the same night as everything else that's happening in Dublin, to be fair.
It is culture night. But it's free in though. That gig will be free in. Silverbacks, Odd Morris, a band called GIF, who we featured recently, and then the Mary Wallopers are doing a trad session as well.
Lovely.
So lots happening on Culture Night, as there ever will be. And we're going to leave you with a track from, patreon.com/999 if you want to support us, what we're doing. Put up a modern ambient playlist this week and a couple of other things coming. And still working away on those t-shirts. They're going to be here very soon. And the badges also are here.
I've seen the badges.
Just about.
They're beautiful.
Okay, that's it. Patreon.com/999 if you want to give us a few quid. Throw some dosh. And I'm going to leave you with a track from a band called Echo, who have a new EP out on the 13th of September. We had these play one of the Future Proof gigs earlier this year, and they were great. This is a song from them called Cabin, and that's it from us. Thank you very much.
Bye.
Bye.